We're holding on page Nun in Shabbos Ois Ayin He. Page Nun Ois Ayin He. We started talking yesterday about the question of what kinds of skins, what kind of animal skins can you write tefillin and other, and then Sifrei Torah and mezuzahs on. We established that it has to be on the skin of a behemoth tahor. So more on that topic. The Gemara says, "Shol by tusi echad as Rabbi Yeshua Agarsi." A certain by tusi asked Rabbi Yeshua Agarsi. So we know you had the tzukim and the by tusim. The followers of Tzaduk and Baitus, the Talmudim of Antigonus Yesodai, who they or their Talmudim, according to different explanations, misinterpreted what Antigonus said in Pirkei Avos about when he says don't be like slaves who serve their master in expectation of reward, but serve without the expectation of reward. He meant, in other words, do l'shem shemayim. They misunderstood, or their Talmudim misunderstood, to mean that there is no tzchava onesh, and they created whole movements of Jews called Tzedukim and Baitusim, respectively, who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. So now, when Baitusi asked to the Shua Garsi, who was one of the Talmudim of Rav Akiva, he says, "Minayin she'en kosvin tefillin al gabei ur behemet tmei." How do we know that you can't write tefillin on the skin of a non-kosher animal? So Rav Yeshua answers him, "Dichtiv," because the pasuk says, we learned this yesterday, "L'man tiyah Torah Hashem b'ficha," in order that the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, which implies midavar hamutar b'ficha. It has to be written on something that's allowed to be placed in your mouth. So the Baitusi asks, Elamei Ata, by that logic, Al Gabi Ur Nevelus Atrefis Al Yukosu, then you shouldn't be able to write them on the skins of kosher animals, of animals of kosher species that are Nevelus Atrefis, because those you're not allowed to eat. And the fact is, the halacha is you are allowed to write on such skins. On the way, Rabbi Yeshua answers him, "Em shalacha mashal lamad devadema." I'll give you an analogy what it's like. L'beis ben adam shenischaivu harigul amalchus. Imagine you have two people who were liable to be executed by the government. Echad hoger melech. One of them, the king himself, kills him. The echad hoger isplakliter, and the other one, the executioner, kills him. Ezemahen meshubach. So which one obviously is on a higher level? Heviem is Esha Hogan Melech, the one whom the king killed. So in other words, so to speak, the Nevelo Trefa that was killed by natural processes, meaning by Hashem directly, is so to speak on a higher level than the one that was shechted. Now Tosfos says, Tosfos points out. I mean, it's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos in the Gemara points out. So that explains if it was a nevela, for example, if it died naturally. What if, for example, if it died by human agency but without being shechted? You know, any other method of killing an animal without shechita makes it nevela. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, once we've established that nevelas that are killed directly by Hashem are in a way more important than their skins can be used for tefillin and mezuzahs and so forth, then yes, the same thing is going to apply across the board to any nevelas, even the ones where Rabbi Yeshua's marshal doesn't exactly work. So the guy asks, Elamei Ata Ye'ochlu, well, by that logic, if you're saying that nevelas and trefas are more important, then you should be able to eat them. Amalei, so Rabbi Yeshua tells him, what are you talking about? A Torah Omer, let's say who'll call Nevela. The Torah says flat out, you're not allowed to eat any Nevela. Va'ata Amret, Va'ata Amarki Yechelu, and you say Ye'ochlu, and you say you should be able to eat them. Amalei, so Rabbi Tusi says, Kalos, beautiful. Kalos, the Greek word, meaning beautiful. If you have an English word like calligraphy and whatnot, that descends. So what's going on over here with this debate, and why is it in Ein Yaakov? So Akosif gives an explanation like this. The gist of it is, he's saying, first of all, why did the Gemara make a point of saying the guy was a Baitusi? Usually when you have such stories, you have Shaw Goyechad or Shaw Minechad or whatever. Here, the Gemara makes a specific point of mentioning that the guy was a Baitusi. Why? So the reason is, because after all, we know the Baitusi, and they do believe in Torah Shabbat, they do believe in keeping the mitzvahs of it. In fact, there are people who say, between the Tzedukim and the Baitusim themselves, there are historians who want to say that the Tzedukim were more the ones that were interested in political power and didn't really care for the mitzvahs, except as they could use them as a vehicle for their ambitions, whereas the Baitusim were, so to speak, the more frum ones among them who actually cared about mitzvahs just according to their corrupted understanding of it. Anyway, so when Rabbi Shur gives him the answer, so the Baitusi thinks that the proper way to understand Torah is as much as possible as it fits with human seichel. So Yeshua explains to him that the bottom line is, of course, it's true we have to try to find as much as possible to try and find rational reasons for the mitzvahs that we'll understand. And when we have a mitzvah that it's hard to understand the reason for, try to figure out what we can understand about the mitzvah that will make it more meaningful to us. But after all is said and done, we got to have Tabula Soil. Hashem says this is the mitzvah, then that's it. Then there's no question in that. So therefore, so if it says flat out in the Torah, you can't eat Nevela, then there's nothing to talk about. On the other hand, when it comes to tefillin, the Torah doesn't actually say in so many words that it has to be from a kosher animal. All it says is "Lamanti Torah Hashem Lefichah," and we darshin from it that it means that it has to be from a kosher animal. So therefore, we have the right to use human logic to use, like Rabbi Yeshua's mashal about the two people executed by the government, to say therefore that in a way Nevelos and Treifus are more important, and therefore that if you can use the skins of shechted animals for tefillin, then how much more so these? So therefore, the guy is very impressed by that and says, Kalos, he says, very good, beautiful, because the Rabbi Yeshua made an excellent point to him that he can understand that it's true. You have to try to understand the Torah rationally, but at the same time, you also have to realize what Hashem says is there's no questioning that. You can try to understand it, but you still have to accept that it's a given. This is what Hashem says, and there's no playing around. Page 9. Page 9, bottom paragraph. Further on in the paragraph, it talks about dinim, it mentions a din in a Mishnah about dinim, about making salt water on Shabbos. The problem is that if you make salt water, then either it's the kind of mixture of salt water that's often used for tanning skins, so therefore you're making it then as a preparation for that malacha, or it's a tolda of that malacha, or it looks like you're preparing for something for after Shabbos or whatever. So therefore the Mishnah talks about dinim of making salt water on Shabbos, that if you're going to make it, it has to be basically very weak salt water. Listen to Geul HaLacha, when Pesach comes out on Shabbos, if you didn't make the salt water before Yom Tov, then you can make it on Yom Tov, but you have to make it in a very weak consistency.
Well, so the shinery or no?
You don't have to make it with a shinery, but you have to make it in a very weak consistency, not very much salt. Anyway, so in this connection, the Gemara brings a couple of braises with statements by Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, one of them about salt water, and another one about, salting certain kinds of vegetables on Shabbos, whether you're allowed to or not. And then there's a third one over here, which is here in Ein Yaakov. Tony Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, Esrig, Snoino Beitza, an Esrig, a radish, and an egg, Il Molik, Klikosin Achitsoina, if it weren't for their outer shell, they would never leave the stomach. In other words, an esrog, the pulp of an esrog, or the inside of the flesh of a radish, or as far as the egg, Rashi explains that what we mean is the yolk of the egg as opposed to the white. So an egg has a shell, of course, but here we're not talking about the external shell. We're talking about the white of the egg compared to the yolk. That can be called the shell of the egg. And we're using that expression because the other ones literally have a shell, have a rind. So therefore, we're using that same expression as far as the egg as well. So in other words, the inside of them is very difficult to digest, only because they have an outer layer, the ester of the radish and the egg, only because of that is it possible to digest them, and eventually they get out of the stomach. Actually, Ben Yehoyada points out on the face of it just the opposite. Egg yolk is very easy to digest. So he says just the opposite. He means as far as the egg yolk, as far as the other two, fine. It means exactly that. They would never leave the stomach. They'd never get fully digested were it not for the fact that the outer rind of them has, it's got fiber, and therefore it helps it move through your system. In the case of the egg, he says the other way around. If you were to eat an egg yolk by itself, it's such concentrated nutrition, there wouldn't be any waste from it at all. Only because you eat it together with the white, and the white is not fully digestible, therefore it ends up producing waste and exiting the body. Okay. Fine. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about this matter of salt water and the various consistencies and strengths of salt water. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions ki osir of dimi, here talking about another kind of salt water, the Dead Sea. Ki osir of dimi oma, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, me'olam le'tova gavla b'yama b'sdoim. Nobody ever drowned in the Sea of Sdoim, meaning the Dead Sea, because the salt content over there is so high that people float in it. Amr Rav Yosef, but Rav Yosef says the way that Rav Dimi phrased it sounds very strange. Hafucha Sdoim v'hafucha Mili. The Sdoim was turned upside down, and it sounds like the statements that are being made about Sdoim are also upside down. What are you saying? You're saying that no person ever drowned there. It sounds like you're implying Gavrahu Delay Tava. No person ever drowned in the Dead Sea. Kshura Tava. But it sounds like you're saying that a beam, a wooden beam, would sink in there, but it doesn't. So you should say nothing sinks in the Dead Sea. Amalei Abayas, Abayas says you're right. That is what he means. Loi Miboya Farmer. He's saying needless to say. Loi Miboya Kshura. Needless to say a plank of wood. That won't sink in any kind of water, whether salty or not, because it's fairly light and buoyant. Ela filo gabra, but even a person, the tub of a person might drown in any other body of water. It will be impossible for him to drown in the Dead Sea because the salt content will make him float. Habona points out an interesting point over here. You find that the Dor HaMabul, the people were killed with water. On the other hand, with Sodom, it was the opposite. People were punished and killed with fire that rained down on them from Shemayim. So therefore, in keeping with that, the water that you find over there, the water of the Dead Sea, which covers the site of where Sodom was, that it's impossible for that water to drown anybody. Like you have, their punishment is the polar opposite of the Mabul, where nobody can possibly drown in their water. Hashem made it so salty that it will support a person's weight. If the only way a person is going to be killed in that area would be like the people of Sodom who were killed with fire. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about, so in this connection, the Gemara goes on to mention a halacha that emerges from this point about the Dead Sea, about the salt content in the Dead Sea, that has to do with Hilchos Shabbos, about whether you're allowed to apply that water to your eyes or to other parts of your body. You wouldn't want to put it on your eyes, things, but apparently there are certain kinds of conditions where, there's certain kinds of eye conditions where apparently it's good for them. Anyway. So the Gemara discusses whether you're allowed to do that. In general, there's a gzeira that abanan that you're not allowed to do medicinal things on Shabbos with certain exceptions. So the Gemara deals with that. Anyway, then the Gemara goes on to talk about other kinds of cures for the eyes. So in particular, the Gemara talks about keeler, which is some kind of ointment or salve or whatever that they used to put on their eyes in those days to cure various kinds of eye disease. So the Gemara says, Shalach Rab Yanai Lama Ukva. So Rab Yanai sent him, who was from Eretz Yisrael, sent a message to Ma Ukva, and he asked him, Lishadol Onmar Mehanach Kiloren Demar Shmuel. Ma Ukva, please send me some of the kiloren, some of the eye ointments that Mar Shmuel used to use. Mar Shmuel, Shmuel the Amora, we know we had in yesterday's Gemara, and you have various places in Shas, was an expert doctor. So he had various preparations of kilo that are good for various kinds of eye diseases, and Rabbanai wants some of them. Ma Ukva, in particular, we know had a very close association with Shmuel. The Gemara mentions elsewhere in Shas that Ma'ukva was a Talmud of Shmuel, and on the other hand, he was also the Av Beistin of the Beistin in the Haudah, and Shmuel was a member of that Beistin. So Gemara mentions elsewhere that when they were learning as Rebbe and Talmud, then Ma'ukva would sit 4 amos away from Shmuel out of respect, and when they were sitting on the Beistin, then the other way around, Shmuel would sit with respect in front of Ma'ukva. Anyway, so Rabbi Yanai knows, therefore, that if Shmuel has Kiloren available, then Ma'ukva can supply him with some. Shalachle, so he sent him back a message. Shaduri meshadal nalach, sure, I'll send them to you. Deloy temach sad ayinano, I don't want you to think that I'm stingy and I don't want to give them away. Ella, but you should know, what's better than that, hochi amash Shmuel, you should know that actually Shmuel said, toiva tipach sonen shachris, it's better when you wash your hands with a little bit of cold water in the morning, or rechitzis yadayim v'raglayim v'chamin arvis, and washing your hands and feet in hot water in the evening, that kind of thing is better for your eyes, mikol kiloden shva'olam, more than all the ointments in the world, more than all the kiloden and ointments in the world. So yeah, by all means, I'll send you some, but you should know that you really don't need the ointments, you just need this kind of thing. And the Gemara says, Tanya nami hochi. In fact, we learn in a braisa that says just that. And the Braisa continues, Hu Hayoime, Rav Huna or Rav Moina used to say in the name of Rav Yehuda, you have to be very careful about touching parts of your body before you wash your hands. Yad la'ayin, if a person touches his hand to his eye, he cuts it, he'd be better off if his hand was cut off, because there's a ruach ra on his hands before he washes, and that can cause him to go blind. Talking about before Negrovasa in the morning.
Morning. Yeah. Dead, yeah.
Yeah. Similarly, Yad L'Chotem Tikotzitz, if a person touches his nose before he washes Negovasa, same thing. He would be better off with his hand cut off because it's going to cause him diseases in his nose. Yad L'Peh Tikotzitz, the same thing to the mouth. Yad L'Ozen Tikotzitz, the same way if he touches his hand to his ear. Yad L'Chasuda Tikotzitz, the same way if he touches a place on his body where there's a scar or a wound from bloodletting. So there also you have like an open area where germs or whatever can get in, or ruach ra can get in and cause problems. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions about this one and a couple of the other ones that are here on the list that we're not only talking before Negovasser, we're also talking at other times also, even throughout the day. To touch an area like that is likely to introduce germs and other things like that into the body through the open hole there. Yad La'ama Tikotzitz, similarly also if the hand touches the ama, the male organ, then also it's better if it's cut off. So again, here Rashi says that actually you have two possibilities. One is we mean before Negovasa. The other is we mean all the time. The Gemara mentions in Nida and sporadically here and there in Shas that a man is not allowed to touch that part of his body because it may cause him hirra and it may cause him to be motzi zedel avatala. So therefore, so here we're saying, not only before Negovasser, but even at other times like that as well. So, in fact, Eitz Yosef discusses it a little bit and says that after all, maybe we could be talking about, he brings from Elia Rabba on the Levush, who mentions a couple of possibilities. First of all, the Gemara in those places mentions there is a certain heter to touch it at a certain part, like the tip of it, where it's not going to cause hirhorim. And also you have a certain heter, the Gemara mentions over there, technically a married man has more of a heter too, because he anyway has passed the salah, he has a wife that he has the ability to satisfy his urges with. So therefore there's less of an issue. Nevertheless though, so then we're still saying, then you still have the issue that they shouldn't be touching it before he washes Negovasa.
Yeah, also bring it on the anus.
Yeah, that's the next one over here. Yad L'Pi Tabas Tikotzitz. The next one is to touch the anus. Right. And again, the same idea. One point, on one level we can be talking about before washing Negovasser. On another level we can be talking about just in general, and it brings in Shulchan Aruch, it causes the person to develop hemorrhage. Actually, the Gemara is going to mention over here that the Gemara doesn't mention over here. The Gemara mentions other things, but whatever. And Shulchan Aruch mentions that touching that area too much can cause a person to develop hemorrhoids. Yeah. And finally, Yad L'Gigis Tikotzitz, and finally, the hand that touches the Gigis, which is a barrel where they brew beer, also Tikotzitz, it would be better if it gets cut off, because again, the Ruach Ra on the hands is going to damage the beer. Here also, you have the Aruch gives an explanation that what it means is if a person is brewing beer, he would do well to keep his hands away from it, because if he starts drinking it, then he's drinking away all his profits. Anyway, so he finishes off Yad Misane, the eye, that the hand that touches the eyes before washing Negovasser can cause them to become blind. Yad Machareshes, the hand that touches the ear before Negovasser can cause the person to become deaf. Yad Malapulipus, and the hand touching the mouth or the nose can cause a person to develop pulipus, which the Gemara in Ksubas explains, and Rashi brings it over here, means a condition that causes a person to have bad breath or bad smell coming from their nose. Bepashtus, the word is related in English, you have the word polyp, like a type of growth. So bepashtus, it means like a growth that causes a bad smell. Anyway, so the point is you have to wash Negovasa before touching those things.
These are just possibilities of what could happen, right? But what if the non-Trump people, they don't know from this.
Right, I mean, I guess, right, we're talking about a person knows better, right, yeah. So Tanya, Ram Gamliel, Ram Nosson Omer, Bas Choren Hizu, this Ruach Ra that rests on a person's hands before he washes his Negovasser is a Bas Choren, it's like a free lady, like a very important, Marsha brings from the Aruch, it means like a very important lady, like a Ben Choren would be a very important person, so a Bas Choren is the same thing, so it's like a very important, finicky kind of ruach, the ena umakpedes, and it's makbed, it won't go away, adshi yuchitz yodav, gimel pomim, until a person washes his hands three times. That is why, for Negovasser in the morning, we wash three times. And even, you know, when it comes to washing for bread, you have different minhagim, whether you wash two or three times on each hand, or minag taka is three, but the velt wash is only two, but Negovasser in the morning, it's universal to do three on each hand, based on this gemara. Another record, Ben Yahu brings in Ben Yahu Yada and Ben Yahu a couple of other possibilities of what Ben Chur, of what Bas Churin means. He said the word Churin also means a hole. So it can mean that this Ruach Ra is very insidious, like a snake that hides out in holes, and it can also mean that it tends to infest holes in the body, which is why we're saying that touching the eyes or the nose or the mouth or wound from bloodletting or whatever is particularly dangerous, because those are all holes into the body, and therefore it has special affinity for those.
What's insidious?
Insidious means like tricky, like it gets in there, it wounds its way in there, kind of. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan says in this connection, puch mavri basmelech. If a person puts puch, which is a kind of eyeshadow, on his eyes, mavri basmelech, that will take away the effect of this basmelech, which is basically another name for the bas churin that we just said. Meaning, in other words, if a person did, he touched his hands before washing megalbaser, and now his eyes are aching because of it, let him put some puch on his eyes, and that will help cure them. Also, puch is good for a person's eyes to make them stop tearing. And it also helps the eyelashes grow long. Which after all, those are important for the normal functioning of the eye. They help keep out dust and dirt and whatever. So therefore, in other words, he's saying puch is a good thing for your eyes if you're having eye trouble.
What is it exactly, this puch show?
Some kind of powder that they used to use in those days as like an eyeshadow. They used to use it as a cosmetic. We find places in Tanakh where women wore it as a cosmetic, but also it was also used for medicinal purposes, as Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. Further on, the Mishnah talks about the general rule. When it comes to eating or drinking medicinal things on Shabbos, the basic rule is this something that healthy people will eat or drink as well? If so, then you're allowed to eat or drink it on Shabbos, even though you're doing it for the therapeutic purpose. As opposed to if it's something that people don't usually eat or drink, unless they're sick, then not. So to put it in modern terms, for example, let's say you'd be able to have a glass of tea on Shabbos because people drink tea when they're healthy as well. On the other hand, let's say if you take medicine, that not, because most kinds of medication the person doesn't take unless they're not feeling well. Yeah, there was an interesting discussion among the post-machron about aspirin, because some people take it on a regular basis even when they're not sick. So is that allowed, or maybe not? But there are other kinds of painkillers and whatnot. You have the rules only if the person's whole body feels sick, or he's confined to bed, or if he's taking a regular course, let's say he's taking several days worth of antibiotics, and then Shabbos comes in the middle, whatever, so you have halachas about it. Anyway, so the bottom line about the aspirin is it depends which posik you ask.
What?
It depends which rub you ask.
Oh.
Yeah.
If you have a migraine,
that's different, because then you're allowed to take any kind of medication. Yeah, we're talking about, you have some people that take aspirin on a daily basis, because supposedly it helps against heart attacks, so yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Mishnah mentions among the things that you're allowed to eat on Shabbos or drink on Shabbos, v'shoisin abuv roya. You're allowed on Shabbos to drink abuv roya, a concoction made from a certain kind of plant. So the Gemara says, my abuv roya chumtaria. So it's called in Aramaic, it's called chumtaria. My chumtaria. What is it? Chutri yechida. A single stick. Meaning Rashi describes it's a kind of tree that doesn't have branches. So therefore it was known to be a good medicine, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, but it is something that healthy people will drink as well. Therefore, you're allowed to drink it on Shabbos, even if you personally are doing it for medicinal purposes. So the Gemara says, well, my Abula, so what would people drink Abu Roya for? Ligiluya. If they had drunk water or wine or what have you that was left uncovered, and we find in many places in Shas that a snake might have drunk from it and injected venom into it, so if a person drunk such a liquid, then it'll help them. A good antidote for it will be to drink a preparation made from Abu Vroya. We're saying is a kind of tree. The pastor said would boil up a piece of wood from the tree, like make a tea out of it and drink that. The Gemara continues, the Eloi, if not, meaning either the person tried it or it didn't work, or he can't get a hold of Abu Vroya, then he was an alternative. Lasi Chamsha Kluvi, he should take 5 roses, the Chamsha Kusta de Shikra, and 5 cups of beer, v'nishlokinu b'hadi adadi, cook that mixture all together, add the kaima anapka until it gets reduced down to an anapka, which Rashi says is a revius. So you started with 5 cups of beer and 5 roses, but the pasha is each cup is a revius, but you're boiling it down until you have a very thick concentrate, which is only a revius. And more, the rest of the water is boiled away. Vinishte, and then you drink that, and that'll be a good antidote for this water that may have venom. So as Mara tells us, the mother of Rabbi Chadboi bar Ami, she prepared a similar concoction for a certain person, but in her case it was chad klila, 1 rose, chad kusa de shikra, and 1 cup of beer. And what she did is shoka, she boiled them together, the ishkise, and she gave him to drink. But then, now, it's only 1 as opposed to 5, so how much good would it do? So what she did is v'shogra tanura, then she fired up the oven, v'garaske, then she raked out the coals, so or you still have the heat in the oven, but not any coals that a person might get burned on, v'usvise lebinsa v'gave. And she put a brick inside the oven so that the guy will have a place to sit on inside there and not get burnt, because the brick won't be quite so hot. And now he sat on there, but he's still in the heat of the oven, and the heat, together with having drunk this, the weaker version of this concoction, the nafa kohutzi yarka, the poison came out of him like a green leaf. So in other words, like he threw it all up, and it came out like a huge green thing. It came out of him, showing that that was all the poison that he vomited up. So in other words, we're saying you don't necessarily need 5 roses and 5 cups of beer. It's enough if you have 1 and 1 combined together with the heat of an oven. The Gemara continues with other possibilities. Reb Ivya says another alternative is you can drink a revius of milk from a white goat. Reb Huna by Yehuda Amar, Lasi Esrog Chalisa, take a sweet Esrog, Vilachaike, carve out the inside of the Esrog, so all you have left is the wine, Vilimalia Dufsha, fill up this hollowed out Esrog with honey, Vilosvi Ben Milale Denura, place it where you have the fiery coals, where you have fiery coals. In other words, so now the rind of the esrog is going to cook together with the honey, the lechle, and then you eat it, and that's also good for if you drank uncovered water. The Gemara continues, Rav Hanina Omar, here's something else that you can use for a number of different purposes. Meira glayim bnei aborim yurn. Urine that is 40 days, Rashi gives 2 explanations. One, that it's 40 days old, meaning it's been fermenting all that time. Or Rashi's second explanation is it comes from a 40-day-old baby. Anyway, so that kind of urine, barzina, so if a person drinks a small cup of it, a kelishful of it, lizibura, that is an effective cure for somebody who was stung by a wasp. Rivi'ah, if he drinks a revius of it, is good la'akrava if he was stung by a scorpion. If he drinks a half of a lug for it, it actually explains that, so riva means a lug, because a lug is 1/4 of a cab. So if he drinks 2 revius, which is a half a lug of that, then that'll be good. Legiluya, if he drank this uncovered wine or water or whatever that a snake injected venom into, and riva, and if he drinks a full lug of that, after the lakshot and malu, then it's even effective, even if he was harmed by black magic, if somebody did black magic against him, he drinks a full lug of this made up wine, then it'll do him good. A lot of these medicinal things that the Gemara said, we talked about this previously in the 6th Perek, we can't do them nowadays because we don't know the exact details. The Gemara sometimes leaves out details of a concoction, or sometimes we don't even know, like here you have, Rashi is giving 2 different explanations, what it means, ben aborim yoim, so therefore we can't do it. The Ma'aril says already we can't, because if we try, and also there's the fact that Mishanu Ativim, people's natures are different, and if we try them and it turns out and then they don't work, then people are going to end up doubting that what the Chachamim say is true. So we learn them, they have deeper ideas in them, although in this particular case, I haven't found even Pesher Agadah, who a lot of times explains a lot of these Gemaras symbolically, even he doesn't seem to deal with it much. The Gemara continues, Amr Rav Yochanan, so Rav Yochanan says in this connection, a nigroin, and Negroin, which is basically beet soup. So the Gemara mentions that in a few places in Shas, it's basically soup made from beets that also has oil mixed in into it. So that the avanger, and also avanger, which is a soup that bangari, Rashi says, a certain type of herb named bangari was cooked in this soup. The tiryaka, and also tiryaka, which there's a couple of possibilities. In some other places, Rashi explains that tiryaka is tsori, which is balsam, like we have in the ingredients of the tortoise. Other Rishonim say that tiryaka, in English it's called teriyak, is a concoction that they had in those days that they used to use against snake bites and against a number of other things. It had a bunch of different ingredients in it, and the Rambam mentions it in a few places in his writings, for example, and so forth. Anyway, so those kinds of things, Rabbi Yechanan says, malu, ben legiluya, ben lechafin, those kinds of things are good for a person, whether he's suffering from the effects of having drunk liquid that was left uncovered and that a snake injected venom into, or whether he was harmed by chopping. Either way, these things, that nigra, or avanga, or tiryaka, are all very good antidotes to that. Okay. Continuing on the topic of people who were harmed by snakes, the Gemara says, Haiman de bolachivya, if a person swallowed a snake, and now there's a problem that now the venom is going to be inside him, loichlik shusa b'milcha, what you should do is feed him shus with salt. Kshus is a plant that Gemara mentions here and there in Shas that it was used to make beer. Rashi in a number of places translates it as hops. Even now they have that beer, many, many kinds of beer, if not all of them, are flavored with hops. Anyway, so you feed him that, mixed with salt, below hate, plus a milli, and make him run 3 mil. And the point of it is, that all of that, the extra heat that all that generates in his body will help kill the snake before it can cause any damage.
Chivya is another name for snake?
Chivya is an Aramaic word for snake, yeah. Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, the Gemara tells, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi chazilahu gavra the bola chivya. In fact, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi once saw a person where that happened to him, swallowed a snake. Idmi like Kaparsha, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi pretended in the guy's presence as if he was a knight, as if he was a soldier riding on a horse, because Rashi explains that way he would scare him and then the fear would be the extra thing, would also raise the guy's internal temperature, and therefore that would help get rid of the snake. He forced him to eat shus with salt, like we said. He made him run 3 mil in front of him. 3 mils is somewhere around 2 miles. The nothic mina guvi guvi, and sure enough, the snake came out of the guy in pieces. So in other words, the extra heat that all that generated inside the guy's body, it not only killed the snake, broke it up into pieces, that then the guy vomited up or whatever. Others say it wasn't that Rav Shimi Ba'ashi saw somebody that happened to, he himself swallowed a snake. Also, Leo idmele kaparsha, and Leo, I know he came and then appeared in his presence like a knight on a horse. And it came out of him in pieces. So according to the first version, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi did that for somebody else. According to the second version, Leo, I know he did that for Rav Shimi Ba'ashi. Okay. The Gemara continues. Haiman the Tauke Chivya. If somebody was bitten by a snake, Lacey Ubra the Chamra Chibauti, he should take the embryo of a white donkey, the Likare, and tear it across the Loisve Ilave, and then put it on the wound, put it on the bite. Mahani Mili the Loishtakach Trefa. Now that would work only if the mother didn't turn out to be a trefa. So the Gemara tells. Hahu Barkasha the Pumbadissa. There was a Barkasha in Pumbadissa, and actually explains that a Barkasha is a Munala Melech, an official of the government. And as we're going to see from the continuation of the Gemara, he was a Yid. So he was.
That part about the mother being the trait, what happened here?
In other words, we're saying that the mother that you're taking the mother donkey that you're taking this embryo from this cure, if the mother is a trepa, then it won't work. It has to be that the mother is completely healthy and doesn't suffer from any of the defects that would mean, obviously by donkey, trepa is meaningless. The donkey is non-kosher anyway, but we mean if it has any of the 70 conditions that the Rambam lists that would make an animal a kosher animal. Not kosher, then if the mother is suffering from one of them, then this won't work. So the Gemara is saying, Ahu Bar Kasha the Pumbedisa. There was a certain Barkasha, a certain government official in Pumbedisa, the Taute Chivya, where a snake bit him, had a place of Hamori Shivauta Pumbedisa. Now, there were 13 white donkeys in Pumbedisa, so it should be easy to find a cure for him. Inu Lakulu, so each one of them, they took the unborn baby from it and ripped it open. They shakku trefa, but each one, it turned out the mother was trefa, so therefore it's not working. Now, then there was one more on the other side of Pumbedisa, but by the time they went to get it, a lion ate up that mother, so therefore they didn't have that one available either. So what's going on over here? Maybe this guy wasn't Sam bitten by a snake. Maybe he was bitten by a snake as a result of being over on a nidui of the Chacham. So why is it we're not able to find a refuah for him? Is because we're not just talking a regular snake bite. He's guilty of violating something that the Chachamim said. Which Tosfos points out, we have a different example with Gemara and Avodah Zarah about a nephew of Rabbi Shmuel who was bitten by a snake and was not over on Divrei Chachamim and then ended up passing away from it. The Gemara says over there, he asked Rabbi Shmuel, there was a certain min at that time who was known to be of a good healer of these things. And Rabbi Shmuel tells him, don't go to this min because you may be influenced by him. And Ben Gamma listens and he passes away. And Rabbi Shmuel praises him for the fact that he wasn't over al Divrei Chachamim. So we see fakert that a person is over al Divrei Chachamim, when a person is not over al Divrei Chachamim, he dies from a snake, right? Tosfos says the difference is over here that in the case of Ben Gamma over there, there was no remedy available at the time, only if he went to this min. Here, the remedy was available. You had 13 or 14 donkeys in town that from which they could take an embryo and use it. Every one of them, it turned out as trefa, and one of them was eaten by a lion, so that shows that it was min hashamayim. So just give a potus godu yishchenu nachash. As the pasuk says, the one who breaks through the fence, meaning when the chachamim put a fence around the Torah, asusia of the Torah, a snake will bite him. So Abaye is saying maybe that's what's going on over here. Abaye was the Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedisa. Amrilei, so they said, yes, ain Rebbe. Yes, Rebbe, you're right. That is exactly what happened. Because when Rav passed away, this is many years earlier, Gozer Rav Yitzchok by Bisna, or Bisna, Rav Yitzchok by Bisna made a Gzeda, Deloy Limte also the Gidmi Lubehi Lulav Tabla, that they should not bring Hadassim and Lulav branches together with a tambourine in front of the Chosin and Kala. So Rashi explains that the Simcha of a Chosin and Kala at a wedding, they would usually bring these things. They would usually bring hadassim and palm branches together with and then they would also, while they're bringing them in front of the chosin kala, they'd be playing tambourines and then shaking tambourines to make a simcha. But here, now, as a result, because Rav passed away, Rabbi Yitzchok bar Bisna made a rule for a while that they shouldn't do that for a period of time. This guy was over on that, and he did. So sure enough, the snake bit him, and he died. So that's why there was no remedy available for him, because it wasn't just the derech ha-teva, it was a result of him being over on that zero of Rabbi Yitzchok bar Bisna. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chofei Yer. We talk about the Suda, the Tzedikim, the flesh of the Lev Yasson. So the Rebbe talked about that it'll be a physical Suda. So we know there are all kinds of Ruchnistic ideas represented in it. The Tzemach Tzedek brings in Sefer Alikutim and so forth. So you have the deeper meaning, but the deeper meaning of the Lev Yasson and the Shur Abar and the Yain and the Shrimmer, there will be also a physical Suda. Because we know that the ultimate schar of Yemos Mashiach is not in Gan Eden. We're in Gan Eden, as the Gemara says, there's no eating and drinking. The ultimate schar is going to be in the world after Tchias HaMesim, Neshamas in Gufim, the way that Ramban holds, and then Tertus Chassidus agrees with the Ramban on that. So therefore, there has to be a physical Suda, and therefore that's in the Suda of Lev Yasson, and so forth, is going to be an actual physical Suda. Halacha. We talked about it yesterday, if a person sees a Chacham Gadol Batorah versus a great scientist or whatever. So now, if a person sees a Goyish king, then he says the Baruch Hashem Nasim the Kvod L'Boss of Adam. This is even if he doesn't see the actual king himself. He sees the covered, and he knows the king is there. As you have the story in Brachas that we learned a while back, where Rav Shachas was blind, but he realized the moment when the king is passing by because the soldiers are walking quietly, and he still said the Baruch. So he says a blind person would say without shame of malchus, although the Alter Rebbe says he can say with shame of malchus. It's a mitzvah to go see the covered of kings. However, if you saw him one time, then don't waste time from your learning to see him again, unless he comes with a bigger army and a bigger covered than before. Whether you say the bracha on many kings that you have nowadays who don't necessarily have the powers that olden time kings do, or for that matter, do you say it on a president or whatever, that you actually have different opinions among the poskim whether you do. And the general rule is if they have the power of life and death, then they're considered a king. So the question is, for example, to what extent do they have that power? They may not exercise it, but do they have it in principle? The president, for example, can pardon somebody, but he can't, on the other hand, he can't condemn somebody to death. Is that enough maybe to say that you should say the bracha on him? So you'll find different rabbanim that take different views on it.
Does that include the king Melech HaMashiach?
Melech HaMashiach is something else. Yeah. Jewish kings, he's not mentioning over here, but for the same way as we said yesterday, that for Chachmei HaTorah, that for Jewish Chachamim, you say, Shecholach Mechachmasya V'yireyav, the same way for a Jewish king, you say, Shecholach Mekvoider V'yireyav. So yes, when we see Mashiach, that will be one of, the Rebbe once talked about, actually, there's a number of brachas we're going to say when Mashiach comes, and that's going to be one of them, yes.
Right.
Yeah.